walked past them many times. I don't think he really looked at them. They're not that different from you, are they?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another installment of Low Bro History. As always, I'm your host, Jacob Lowe, with my co-host,
Henry Lowe.
Or you could flip-flop it anyway.
We're both co-hosting this bad boy.
We're both co-hosting this bad boy. We're talking about World War One, so sit back, you know, crack open a soda, crack open a brewski. You know,
if you're of age,
or maybe you just listen to us because you want to fall asleep at night. That's cool too.
We've gotten that, and
yeah,
we're not offended. Get sweet dreams if you're heading to bed. We're going to talk about World War One, and we're going to keep you on. Hopefully, we'll keep you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah, I mean, people are like, yeah, I listen to your podcast, I fall asleep all the time. I'm like, people are like, are you offended by that? I'm like, no, absolutely not.
Good. Get some rest. I'm glad we can bring...
Get some Z's there,
get some Z's. We'll be bringing you some nice shut-eye. Shut-eye, yep.
You know, we got some smoothing voices, man. We got some smoothing sounds of just...
Smoothing sounds of ecstasy.
Exactly. Yep. So, you know, just go to sleep. If you want to go to sleep, crack them with brewski. If you're not of age, don't do that. You know, we're not endorsing anything. Crack open a soda instead. Hey, you want to get a nice cold Coke? Crack open a soda. Go ahead.
All right.
But we're continuing our discussion about World War One.
Let's see. Let's do a little recap for everyone who's... If you haven't checked out the episode before... Recommend you go checking out this before you listen to this one, because we kind of broke down most of World War One, gave our little two cents on it. You know,
we kind of got into some World War Two as well.
Yeah, yeah, because you kind of can't really talk about one without the other. But we really discussed a lot about the, you know, beginnings of World War One, the technology that advanced throughout World War One, and we really did have an interesting conversation about the...
Well, we were talking about how, you know, it began as a war no one thought would last, and then we were talking about the German advance through Belgium and through France.
The Schlieffen Plan.
The Schlieffen.
But really,
what a name, dude.
Yeah.
Schlieffen.
I'm naming my kid Schlieffen.
And then we were talking about the race to the sea and how the war kind of evolves.
Right.
It begins as a mobile war, but it slowly, you know, becomes a entrenched war.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about, you know, and then we obviously talked about, you know, Serbia, Sarajevo, Franz Ferdinand.
Right, right. Yeah, we kind of broke down really like the stuff that you would think of when you think about World War One.
Yeah.
The assassination of the Archduke, but we really got into like years before World War One even started. What led up to World War One? The militarism, the imperialism, nationalism.
Yeah.
So the nation's pride.
Yeah. And the thing that you can, there's a great political cartoon where it's all the European powers, you know, Britain, France, Germany, and they're literally carving up Africa like a piece of pie.
Right. Right.
And so that kind of gives you a sense of what everybody is about. They're trying to expand their dominance in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course World War One kicks off and
things kind of
spiral out of control from there
very quickly. And like you said, they thought that it was going to be a, you know, quick, you know, skirmish, then it turned into a, you know, knockdown, drag out
race to extermination,
to say it lightly.
But once people started with the trenches and things like that, it became a war of how do we kill the enemy the quickest.
Right.
And that's when we see mustard and chlorine gas. That's when we see
tanks,
machine guns, things like that that were never introduced. And we mentioned this last podcast, is people didn't understand even the rifles back then were pretty powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a range of like 1,200 feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, could just instantly, you know, gun down a person. But yet in military academies throughout Europe, they're still talking about equipped bayonets and charging, you know, at the front lines. So,
yeah. So it was almost like, I think that was the thing that kind of struck me a lot about our first conversation was how you had schools, military schools, still teaching the things like teaching current military tactics that were at a very rapid rate becoming outdated, and things really like you said, you know, they're still teaching fixing bayonets and, you know, military school, but then you get to the battlefield and you got, you know, guys with machine guns and poison mustard gas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of like battle strategies quickly changed over a span of, you know, 4 years. And we talk about World War II so much because it's almost like the battle strategies and the shifts that happened in World War I and the people that were involved in World War I are going to be seen again in World War II, about 20 years later.
Yeah.
It's kind of fascinating.
And the thing is, you know, we have so many major figures who would play a part in World War II,
right,
that emerge from this. You know, we have Churchill, Hitler, Stalin.
Yeah.
And it was all trying to disrupt people. So, for instance, Germany, interesting fact, Germany was fighting on two fronts. They were fighting on the Western Front and the Eastern Front. And they wanted to come up with a plan to destabilize Russia, which was the most powerful of the Allies.
Yeah.
And they contacted this dude named Lenin, who was an outspoken communist.
John Lennon?
No, John Lennon. He probably would have brought peace to Russia. I don't know.
They contacted John Lennon. They said, start a band. And let's get this thing over with.
Yeah, I thought that was in a movie, man.
I thought we knew this.
But they contacted Lenin, who was an outspoken outspoken communist, and they put him on a train, and they sent him to Russia. And this is when the Russian Revolution, he sparked the Russian Revolution.
Which occurred during World War One.
Which occurred during World War One, that transitioned power.
Yeah.
In the region. And one of his closest followers was Stalin.
Wow.
And it's kind of funny because Lenin thought Stalin was too much of an extremist. And that's the thing about it. And of course, you know, Lenin leads the Russian Revolution and overthrows the government and effectively just destabilizes the old guard in Russia.
Yeah.
You know, and what's kind of funny about that is you have that, and then you have Putin with the Bolsheviks.
Oh, yeah.
And how he was able to convince them to trust him and then assume political power.
Yeah. Yeah.
After they were all dead.
Yeah.
You know.
So for those of you listening, you know, we're comparing things that happened over 100 years ago to things mm-hmm. that you kind of see today. You know, when you kind of think like, what's the deal with Russia? You know, like what's the, you know, the Iron mm-hmm. Curtain, as Churchill yeah. called it. Why, what's going on over there? And, you know, what's the deal with their government and things like that? And then you go back 100 years and you're like, oh, you know, you see the things that led up.
The progression.
Yeah.
Of it. You know, Churchill, after World War II, was basically fired. You know, he wasn't reelected.
Yeah.
Because people thought, you know, he's effective in war, but he's not effective during peacetime. And so he goes over to America and gives this speech, and he says an iron curtain has descended over Europe.
Yeah.
And we don't know what's on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show, you know, this kind of like veering off subject here, but it's all relevant, you know, is it, you know, these things are relevant today, you know, and
yeah,
you know, yeah. You go back 100 years, you go back to World War One, and you look at the Russian Revolution and you look at Stalin and all this, and
yeah,
it's still playing out today. So,
and it is interesting how, if at a glance, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, like, I personally don't know what is happening over in Russia, but at a glance, you're like, oh, they have a quote unquote president
mm-hmm.
who looks nice for the papers, but you don't know what's going, you really don't know what's going on behind closed doors. And you have to really look at the history and be like, okay, like, let's just remember that, you know, this nation has been kind of we have a lot of history with Russia.
And well, the thing is what kills me is that Putin is ex-KGB.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So his secrets have secrets.
And what's interesting is he'll be in interviews and he'll be speaking Russian. He speaks English perfectly well.
Oh, does he really?
But he maintains that facade.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of like, oh, I don't really know what you're saying, you know, and stuff like that. But
he's smarter than he
lets off like he's stupid, but he's smarter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
going back 100 to World War I. Going back 100 years, like, Stalin looks up to Lenin,
mm-hmm.
who is a, you know, known communist, mm-hmm. outspoken communist. And Lenin effectively overthrows the Russian government during World War One.
Mm-hmm.
So, we were kind of talking about how Lenin may have been kind of acting as like a pawn in the grand scheme of World War One.
He was
kind of being used. In a way,
he was being used by Germany.
Yeah.
That was the whole point. Yeah. Germany didn't want to fight on two fronts.
Yeah.
Especially when there's a stalemate going on in the West.
Yeah.
And up to the point, you know, Russia is advancing through East Prussia during World War One, and they're seemingly invincible.
Yeah.
You know, so they either have to, one, figure out a way to deal with Russia and lose the war, or lose the war.
Yeah.
You know, and so their master strategy was, let's send Lenin over there and see if he can destabilize the country, which effectively he did.
Yeah.
So that they could focus all their resources on the Western Front.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's really funny, you know, we really don't know what started World War One. We can look at the assassination of Franz Ferdinand and
right.
say that. We could look at the series of treaties that each nation made with one another.
Right.
And it, you know, the assassination was just a domino effect.
Yeah.
But we know for certain what started World War Two, and that was the Treaty of Versailles. So,
but at this point, though, towards the end of the war, England is basically, if not totally destroyed, and they're not happy.
Everybody is devastated by this war. You know, I think a lot about this podcast is not really about the specifics of history, but examining the philosophical, right. psychological impact of such events.
Yeah, like cultural impact a lot too,
you know. And after World War One, they had the Treaty of Versailles, and Woodrow Wilson came with a plan.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
I mean, he came with an ironclad plan.
Yeah.
You know.
High hopes for Woodrow.
This is the territory that's going to go to who and things like that. And he was utterly ignored.
Yeah.
Now, across the table at this time was Japan, who had given significant amount of resources, manpower to aid in the European conflict. And they were hoping at some point to kind of extend a olive branch, you know, or a hand.
Yeah, yeah.
To Europe to kind of show their place in the world. And they were ignored too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Woodrow Wilson actually created what was known as the League of Nations, what would later become the UN.
Yeah. What is the League of Nations again?
The precursor to the UN.
which is
just...
Because I think the UN encompasses a lot of different allied powers. And what was this... I mean, this was basically like in hopes of never starting another World War I ever again.
Exactly. You know, it's just like a confederation of European nations, America, you know, just a confederation of nations.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, right.
It's like a JAL, man. The Justice League of America. We're coming together, baby.
It's the Justice League. Woodrow Wilson's coming together with the Justice League. He's got an ironclad plan, but he's getting snubbed a little bit.
But he's getting snubbed and he's just totally ignored. And
everyone really just wants to just give it to Germany.
Just want to punish Germany. That's all they want to do.
Like real bad. So I mean like what I mean, so some things that they did to Germany as a result
they
of the
They just
first
imposed time. Strict
like you can never rebuild your army ever again.
You can never rebuild your army ever again. Debts. Things like that.
You had to pay back everything.
And there's a classic photograph of Germany or of a German citizen burning their money because it's worthless at that point.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
You know.
So, I mean...
They're burning it to keep warm is really what's going on.
Yeah. Even in World War I, you know, you're kind of thinking like, you know, we're at some point you got to think, you know, all pride, nation's pride aside, you have to think that when you're in the trenches for days, you know, with your feet rotting, you got rats all around you and people are dying every day and it seems like nothing's getting better. You have to think like somebody must have been saying like, what are we even really doing this whole thing for? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's hard to justify a bad side. I feel like in World War I, as opposed to World War II, where so many atrocities were committed, as there were in World War I. But, you know, when you think about, I could be wrong, but, you know, when I think about Germany at a glance in World War I, it's a lot different than the Germany that we see in World War II, where it really shows its ugly face and it's pure. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're basically destroying evil, you know, and the soldiers in World War II, you're like, we know what we're fighting for, you know, it sucks, but we know what we're doing, you know, and it seems like in World War I, you're kind of like.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite movies by Stanley Kubrick is Paths to Glory. And it's just like this movie, like the war is the enemy.
Right, right.
You know, that's why I think a lot of people don't like to talk about World War, or not talk about World War I, but kind of discuss it in full. Mm-hmm. World War II, the Nazis are evil. We're here to...
The Japanese bombed us.
You know, we're out here to... But
we're going for the jugular.
In World War I, it was the war is evil.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
it's almost like we're not fighting against flesh and blood here. This is something.
But in that movie, there's a great ending scene with Kurt Douglas. Kurt Douglas.
Oh, Kurt Douglas
is the one of the French officers. And there's a beautiful scene where it's the French battalion. And they bring in this German girl to sing, and they're all kind of like heckling her, and you know, and she starts singing. And they start humming along with the song. Mm-hmm, you know, and stuff like that. And it's kind of like a powerful scene in the way that they're not hate, you know, what began as hate towards another person or another country.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really what it's, what it is, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of more like the war is hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And so Kirk Douglas is out, he's watching this from the window, from the window, and he gets a report, we got to ship them back out to the front, and he goes, just let them be for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think that kind of explains World War One in and of itself, especially through film and cinematography.
Right, right. It does convey the message of, you know, this is kind of the idea in a nutshell.
Yeah.
What, at least, kind of what we're trying to kind of portray.
Because what happened was, is in the beginning of the stages of the war, you know, we talked about this last episode, but how there was so much fear growing.
Right, right.
You know, the Germans being accused of cutting off children's hands and
right
rape and
the Ottomans and the,
you know, all this other stuff and the and then the Ottomans, Armenian, you know, genocide. The Armenian genocide,
yeah,
you know, and that stuff is not talked about really
a whole lot,
you know. I mean, if you ask anybody, you know, what are the greatest atrocities of World War II? You know, you're going to be like, oh, the Holocaust and stuff like that. The, what is it? And, it, you know, and stuff like that. But you talk about World War One. What are the atrocities of World War One? And nobody remembers the Armenian genocide.
Right, right.
Unless you're Armenian, you know, but...
Yeah, for the most part, it's kind of like a buried. It's kind of a very buried topic. You know, even I remember even in history class talking about World War One, there was no really deep discussion about the Armenian genocide. You know.
Yeah, it's just something that's not covered.
Yeah, but. But definitely something that's very important and something that you kind of think about when you think about World War One. You think about the impact that it left on so many nations, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, it forged our modern world.
Yeah.
The way that we know today.
Right. Know? Right. Yeah.
And... You know, that's kind of like lightly putting it, I understand, but it really is. But what I'm going to do right now is I'm a big fan of poetry, and I think that it has a place in history.
Totally, yeah.
To kind of give you an idea of what somebody during that time was thinking.
Right, right, yeah.
So this is called In Flanders Field by John McCrae. M-C-C-A-E.
Mm-hmm.
In Flanders Field, the poppies blow. Between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky, the larks still bravely singing fly. Scarce heard amid the guns below, we are the dead.
short days ago, we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders field. Take up our quarrel with the foe, to you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high if ye break faith with us who die. We shall not sleep though poppies grow in Flanders field. You know, you read that poem and you're like, damn, it was pretty miserable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see what comes out of people when they're in, you know, extreme circumstances, you know, and then they just kind of like spew out this poem, and then you're like, to in some way artistically in a speaking in a way of conveying, you know, like the emotions that they were experiencing at the time, you know. Yeah. And it really does kind of give you like an insight into, you know, where he was, what may have influenced that, and things like that.
I mean, the craters created by the artillery of World War One can be seen from space.
Yeah.
If that doesn't give you any idea of how devastating it was, I don't know what it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know.
Right.
And the thing is it was so devastating, you know, Hitler was amongst a gas attack, you know, during World War One.
Oh, wow.
And some say that's what motivated him to gas people.
Oh, really? Wow, that's pretty...
You know, during the Holocaust.
Dang.
So,
that's crazy.
Yeah. I'm not feeling sympathy for the dude.
Right, right, right.
But
you wonder, I mean, it is a kind of a what if history kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know, cause you know, like obviously we make mistakes, we'll always make mistakes in history. And by when I say that, I'm talking about the mistake of, you know, the Treaty of Versailles being so heavily, so harsh towards Germany. You know, because it's like, what if, say, maybe it wouldn't have changed anything, but what if maybe the Treaty of Versailles was a little bit, what do you think would have happened if the Treaty of Versailles was maybe slightly less harsh and was a little bit easier on the Germans, and we kind of gave Woodrow Wilson a chance to, you know, institute this plan? Because I think one of the big mistakes was the harshness of the treaty.
Yeah, I mean... You know, if Woodrow Wilson was able to actually speak and give his plan, World War II...
You never know. I mean, you know, it's hard to say like one event.
World War II might have not been as devastating. I'm not saying that it would prevent it, but...
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Because
might not have been as devastating.
Right, right. Because we don't know like what would have happened, but I mean, maybe... You know, because I mean, it was almost like Hitler was on. It was almost like the first part of World War II. Hitler was just on a revenge tour. You know, let's take back the Rhineland. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's annex Austria. They're German speaking. That's our place. You know,
Yeah, and the thing is he actually invited Ludendorff to a rally.
Who?
Hitler.
Who's Ludendorff?
Ludendorff is one of the main German generals of World War
One. Oh, gotcha, gotcha.
And so Hitler invited him to a rally to commemorate the who even cares.
Yeah.
You know, so-and-so, like, he was that clinged to the past.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And wanted to wreck. So that's like what you say, you know, like, yeah, let's take back the Rhineland. Let's take back all of these territories we lost in World War One.
Right, right.
You know, because it's our destiny.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, I don't know, it's just sad because,
you know, step one of committing a genocide is convince everybody else that this person is different from you.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, ah, they're so-and-so or so-and-so and so-and-so.
Right.
You know, and that's a dangerous philosophy to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the consequences because of it.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
And, you know, the like, that's the Armenian genocide with the so the Armenians lived in the Caucasus region of Eurasia.
Right.
And a lot of them fought for Russia. A lot of them fought for the Ottoman Empire. It was kind of like this quasi...
Oh, really?
...state. And the Turkish government, a new Turkish government, came to power, called the Young Turks, and...
Yeah.
...said, you know what, these Armenians...
Yeah.
They're fighting for the enemy, therefore all Armenians...
Yeah.
...need to be executed.
Right.
So...
Yeah.
And that's what happened, and, you know, not a lot of Turkish people went along with it, but...
Yeah.
It's a sad thing, you know?
Yeah. No, definitely, definitely. I think that, I think that, you know, kind of tying all this together with, you know, World War One and, you know, the impact that it left, you know, people were very, obviously, you know, I'm sure relieved that it was over, but it was like, this is just the beginning, you know, it's kind of crazy that there was such a 20-year gap, you know, between like World War One and World War Two. Mm-hmm. And it really like started with, you know, all these alliances getting together and then ending with, you know, like you really got to think about World War One and World War Two almost as like this, like same, one, the same thing, like just a continual thing, you know, of World War One, starting with the assassination of Archduke, leading all the alliances to come together, and ending with the atomic bomb being dropped in Hiroshima. You know, like these events in history are intertwined, you know.
It's the same thing that's going on with Russia and the Ukraine right now. So he wants to take back that region and all of the Baltic states that were lost during the Cold War. You know, I mean, it's the same thing. You know, you give someone an inch, and they're going to take a mile.
Right, right.
And that's what he wants to do with Ukraine.
Yeah.
History is repeating itself. Bruise some of the faces from the past. Bruise some of the faces from the past. Bruise some of the faces from the past. They're not that different from you, are they? Bruise some of the faces from the past. Bruise some of the faces from the past. Bruise some of the faces from the past. You've walked past them many times. They're not that different from you, are they? They believe they're destined for great things. Just like many of you, their eyes are full of hope. Just like you. If you listen real close.